How about that, Daryl? 8 of the last 10, they've won. And as I found out when the second half was about to start here, Guardians have the easiest schedule the rest of the way. Pretty good start to... we call it the second half. It's not really the second half because we're well past the halfway point of the season, but you get the idea after the All-Star break.
Get your playoff tickets now.
You're locking them in.
They're hot. They're hot. Scorching hot.
I know Owen was telling us before the show he's been locking them in for a while now to the playoffs.
I mean, they're
How long ago did you make that claim?
I said it on air over the break, All-Star break.
Okay.
Yeah, they're going to, you know, tar and feather the really bad teams in baseball. They'll make the playoffs and not go anywhere. It'll be great.
I think that's actually an interesting question because of the teams they're playing. The A's, they just wrapped up. They got the Orioles now coming up.
They just beat the homeless A's, okay? Let's be real.
Kansas City, then they got the Rockies. Yes, it is a favorable schedule, but is that going to, like, create this fool's gold
idea of
who they are before the trade deadline?
Here's where you can't get confused on what's happening, right? They've shaved off 4.5 games off the division and haven't shaved anything off the wild card.
Yeah.
There's still an easier path. It's the longer path, but it's the easier one. You have less teams to travel through.
Do the Detroit Tigers go full Titanic down the stretch?
That would be so... I mean, listen, we've seen teams tank in the second half of the season before. It's not unheard of. The fact that the Guardians' schedule favors them is going to make this something where they have a... I think they're going to have a legitimate shot. They're going to have a legitimate shot because of the schedule that they have.
Listen, Austin Hedges collected an RBI single yesterday. Granted, he blew the suicide squeeze, but he did hit the baseball bat touched a baseball, okay? Which, that is rarefied air when you're talking about Austin Hedges. So when that's you know
everything's
it's going
good when Austin Hedges gets an RBI.
When Austin Hedges is making contact.
Yeah, I just, like, listen, I can give some credence to the idea that this team, what they were in that 10-game losing streak, was not, like, fully who they are. I can also give some credence to the idea that right now they're hot, and that's what the baseball season's ultimately all about, right? Like,
get hot at the right time and then hope it carries you through October.
It's 162 games. You're going to have bad slumps. You're going to have bad... You're going to have high slumps. Or not high slumps. You're going to have
high... There's no such thing as a high slump.
It doesn't make any sense. I'm not used to being up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
This is a roller coaster ride, all right?
Yeah.
They went through the
big... peaks and valleys.
They went through the big dip, and now they're coming out of it. They've won 8 of 10. And they're playing really bad baseball teams. They ought to be able to get real fat down the stretch and get themselves into the postseason. And then we'll learn once again that they really are not contenders. They just played a lot of bad baseball teams and did what they were supposed to do. And that was beat down. Because the meat of the schedule, they are not good against the quality contenders in Major League Baseball this year. So, like, let's just, it's great, enjoy it, you know, it's fun to see them winning again, it's fun to see that they're able to score more than 2 runs in a game with some semblance of regularity again, so take it in, enjoy it, but like also too, let's be realistic about where they really are, and the campaign that I had to play the kids, well... Once again, circumstances dictate they're not even going to be able to do that. So I think they're going to stand pat. I don't think Carlos Santana gets traded. I think Stephen Kwan is here for the duration of the season. I think Emmanuel Class A is here through the duration of the season. I think that they're gonna go status quo here. They're not gonna blow it up's the wrong word.
Yeah,
but I don't think that they're going to be the sellers at the trade deadline that I thought they were going to be about 4 weeks ago.
Well, what's interesting about that, Daryl, we will get more into the trade deadline and where the Guardians stand and what they should or shouldn't do coming up a little bit later. Especially, I was in on Saturday doing my Saturday show with Earl. We had Al Pawlowski on. He dropped a bomb that he thinks they're going to be slight buyers, potentially. So we can talk about what that means a little bit later in the show.
Well, fans are going to the ballpark.
Yeah, but what I find interesting, Daryl, is like, I feel if they stand pat, that's like the worst thing they could do. Because to me, I get it. They're playing good baseball. You had that stat in June when we actually hosted together. You brought it up. There was a stat in June where like they had scored like four runs or less over the course of however many games, and it was like the most miserable offense we've ever seen.
And it was like reading Brown statistics.
It was bad. And that's flipped in July. Like in July, since that Astro series, they've now scored like four plus runs in like almost every game.
Yeah.
They've scored like six plus runs in a handful of games, including doing so twice this weekend. So like the offense is clicking right now, but do we believe that that's going to stay true come September, come October, those times? And that's my biggest issue with like, as when we get into the deadline stuff is like, if you stand pat, that tells me you think this team is like, hey, we're good. We can do what we need to do, or what we can accomplish, what we want to accomplish with this group as stands. And I just don't think that's the case. Like, I still saw that 10-game losing streak. We still saw that offense put up putrid numbers in the month of June. Like, I think when you have some extremes like that losing streak and then what they're doing now, I think it's okay to say, yeah, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, and I still think you need some help.
But here's the thing. What do they have to improve the team? Okay? That's the
you
other...
Like, what do they have to give up?
Right.
I think it's one of those situations where you almost got to do like the thread the needle on like selling while buying. So I've been seeing everything that's been saying, been said about Emmanuel Clase is probably still going to be here, et cetera, et cetera. But maybe Clase is the piece you'd move to add something to the lineup, like a proven bat to the lineup to try to inject some more offense into things. I'm not saying they're going to do it, but I'm saying like, that's kind of the thought process I have because I don't know. It's not that I'm trying to poo-poo the Guardians. They're playing great baseball. People are showing up to the ballpark. Like you said, they have four games against the Orioles starting today that I'm sure more people are going to be tuning in for. It's still the peak of summer. We got training camp just around the corner, but the Guardians are on the brain and people are starting to get back into this team now that they're starting to win a little bit. So I get it. It's an exciting thing. It's the, like, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on you thing where, hey, we've seen this before. Like, we've seen the Guardians do this to us before, and then where does it end when it's all said and done? Like, I'm not...
Fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
That's right. You can't get fooled again. Like, they do this all the time where they have these... Because the strength of schedule is what it is the rest of the way... I think they are going to win a lot of games. I think they're going to put themselves in position to maybe be back in the postseason. But is as currently constructed, is that enough to truly be a contending team in the playoffs? I don't think it is.
They are a threat to nobody in the playoffs.
And I get that the AL is wide open, too. I will concede that.
And I understand that. But I'm telling you, they are a threat to nobody in the playoffs. They're going to get there. I do believe... They're going to get there, and a big reason why is they have gotten through the meat of the schedule. It's a lot easier down the stretch. Knock on wood, they stay healthy. That's obviously going to be a key, but no, I think that they'll get a wild card. They're just not going to go anywhere because they're not true contenders. The lineup is extremely weak, especially the bottom half of the lineup. It's consistently inconsistent, all right? There are basically three bats that you can legitimately count on. That's Stephen Kwan, Carlos Santana, Jose Ramirez.
Yeah.
That's three. Okay, last time I checked, there's nine guys in a batting order. So that means six of your nine, it's hit or miss. You don't know what you're getting on a given night. Now, the trend right now, We're back in the upswing. It's looking good.
Yeah.
Again, like I said, Austin Hedges made contact with the baseball yesterday.
You've got no faith in Angel
Martinez.
Yeah, you got no faith in Rocchio.
I have no faith in Rocchio. Angel, I'm intrigued by, but he's like, I'm not sold on him.
You've got no faith in Manzardo.
Yeah, you got to see him.
The problem with Manzardo was just because he's platooning. It's just hard to like really know where he's.
Got no
like,
faith in David Fry.
David Fry is coming around, I'll say that.
He's
part of that log jam that was like part of the DeLauder discussion until this wrist thing.
He's coming
That's the other thing. It's like, and Zach Mizel's even talked about this. At the beginning of the season, the Guardians essentially implied, like, Chase DeLauder, we have plans for him to be here up at the Major League Club at some point this summer. Now, wrist thing has set that back.
Now they said yesterday, Chris Antonetti, president of baseball operations.
Have him see Dr. Graham just so he can go and assess, to help us understand a little bit more about what's happening and then determine the right path forward from there. Because we really want to try to understand what's going on and how does that inform how we're thinking about the best path forward.
Yeah, that's right. Chase DeLauder.
Not great.
We'll
see you in 2026, I guess.
Love the Antonetti-isms, okay? Best path forward is right there, right up there. We're excited about the future and best path forward.
That's the problem anyway, even if it was a Chase DeLauder thing. That's where the real sticking point is right now, is the log jam at first base. He's a first baseman. Yeah. Because now you've got, so you already had Manzardo and Santana there. David Fry, at some point, you've got to get him going more consistently.
He's not going to be in the field, though.
But they're talking about there's a small possibility that he plays first. He's not throwing the ball as much. They're saying it, though, Daryl. I don't care that you can't do it or not. They're talking about it around the team.
I understand that they are, but I'm just being very realistic about where he's at.
But we can't cut that off right now because that's one of the only options that they have to make the team better.
The first base logjam is one of the biggest problems with this team right now.
Because they have a logjam at first base.
The solution there would be to move Carlos Santana, but you're not going to get anything for him right now.
Yeah, yeah. That's
and you need his veteran presence in that clubhouse.
Well, and that goes back to my larger point of, like, if they're winning baseball games now, they're not going to move Santana anyway because they're going to be like, he's one of the only bats that we can really count on consistently. Like, and it all comes full circle. This is the things that the Guardians talk themselves into. They're like, hey, we're playing good baseball now. We don't have to change anything. And they get the fan base bought back in, and then no one's the wiser. But this is why I feel like when we get to the trade deadline, I don't know. I think the worst decision they can make is to do nothing. Because I think that's just like, I think that's disingenuous to the fans, frankly. Because the fans saw this team at their worst. They're seeing them at their best right now, but they also saw them at their worst. And we know, like I said, if the truth is somewhere in the middle, is this lineup really good enough to do something in the postseason? The Tigers aren't the Tigers from last year. Like, they're a better team right now. Like, I just don't know if I believe it. So I hope there's something in the cards, but I'm not necessarily feeling that
way. The only thing
you have
going for you with the Tigers is they're young. And
yeah, that is true.
Maybe you catch them slipping, right? But their pitching staff is...
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's absolutely ridiculous. And listen, I know you're getting Shane Bieber back, so maybe that helps your pitching staff try to go toe-to-toe with a team like that. But when push comes to shove, like, we know what the playoffs are about. You got to have power hitters, and the Guardians don't have any. And then the one guy you were maybe thinking at some point was going to inject some life into the lineup is Chase DeLauder. And now that goes out the window, and we're probably not going to see him until 2026. How are you feeling about the Guardians? Another win yesterday. They take 2 out of 3 against the A's. Another cupcake series coming against the Orioles here starting later tonight. They are rolling. It's exciting stuff. But do you believe that it's fool's gold or that the team's starting to get their mojo back and actually make a legitimate run at the playoffs? That was yesterday. Scottie Scheffler... When in the third leg of the career Grand Slam, he wins the Open. Daryl, there was a stat that was shown at the end of his final round yesterday where it detailed that the number of days between Tiger Woods' first major win and his fourth major win was 1,197 days. The exact number of days between Scottie's first major win and his fourth major win was also 1,197 days. And I find that pretty, like, that's one of those, like, how the hell is that possible type stats? And I don't know. I know you don't watch as much golf as probably I do.
That is since Tiger has retired, that is 100% true. Tiger was appointment.
He was
television for me, and now golf is no longer appointment television for me. And you're now going to sit here and talk me into that I need to jump on the Scottie bandwagon and be glued to my TV for every major.
I think there is like a chance that he is putting together
Tiger Woods 2.0,
the most like Tiger Woods run we've seen. And listen, he doesn't have the majors at this age that Tiger did. That's the biggest difference. Is I gave you that stat about first to fourth, but Tiger was doing that like when he was 20 to 24. Because by the age of 29, which is what Scotty is, Tiger already had 10 majors under his belt.
Yeah, they were talking about him chasing down the all-time record for majors.
And then for his own personal reasons, that obviously never happened. But but listen, what Scotty is doing is absolutely remarkable. Two major tournament wins this year. He's in line now to complete the career Grand Slam.
Listen, when he wins all four of them in the same year, I'll get interested.
Well, it's funny you say that because that's literally never happened. Like in modern golf, I think there's actually a golfer, I don't know his name. There's a golfer who did it back in the day where there was like other tournaments that were considered
like
major tournaments.
Like in the 1800s?
Yeah, like I think there was like an amateur tournament that was considered a major back then, and he won that. He like won a bunch of different ones that were considered majors at the time. But in the modern system where it's the Masters, US Open, PGA, the Open, nobody's ever won all four in a calendar year. If he does something like that, that would, I think, put people like back on board.
Golfer was Bobby Jones. He's a pretty big name, right? It was 1930, though.
I just forgot who it was.
It was U.S. Open, British Open, the U.S. Amateur, and the British Amateur.
Yeah, okay, there you go. Those were the majors back then in 1930. So how the golf landscape has changed. But no, and here's the other thing that's tough. Like, I get Scotty isn't nearly as polarizing as Tiger. Tiger had this it's like the fist pumps when he made the big putts, and there was this like character out there on the
Sunday red.
Yeah, like you there was just this emotion.
What Scotty wear on Sunday?
I think he was wearing light blue yesterday.
Ooh, Sunday light blue. There's a marketing strategy for you, Nike. Just do it in your Sunday blue.
But I think
just be it if you feel like it.
Like Scotty doesn't have the emotion quite at that level. I mean, also he had the comments this week about like how golf isn't what defines him. That's got to be the hardest thing for golf, is that they have this other worldly player finally in their midst. Like how many years did they wait to find like the next Tiger? Like
you can never be the next Tiger if you say golf is not what defines me. Well, because golf is what defined Tiger Woods until his wife threw a putter through his window.
And then he was defined by something else entirely.
We found out way too much about Tiger Woods that none of us needed to know.
And that's, waitresses were what defined him.
That is true. You know what's funny about this? Like so many people's like dreams of the idea of Tiger Woods was like crushed in that moment. That was honestly the moment for me. Like I was in college then where I was like, see, this is why you can't let your kids be like, I idolize this athlete and they're like, I want to be like them when I get older. Cause you always find out something down the line that's not so great about them. It happens every single time. I know people who are like, yeah, I really like this pitcher. And then you find out that pitcher was doing some shady stuff on the side.
Well,
like
here's my deal when it comes to the personal lives. As long as it doesn't end up in the police reports or in the courts, it's none of my business.
I mean, to an extent, but I eventually those things feel like they always end up in the papers, don't they?
Well, they're... You just made my point for me, Spencer. Jeez.
But if you're going to be in entertainment, which is what all this is,
yes, yeah,
your personal lives do become people's business.
Yeah. It's fair.
And that's part of the deal. It's part of the sign up, right?
Yeah. Which is why though, like I get why Tiger, the revelation of what Tiger was wrapped up in became so
like, well, because he had this pristine image.
Yeah. Yeah.
Off the course, he had this pristine image and that got shattered by the events that took place and the events that were revealed. And so that clean-cut, all-American superhero image and got destroyed. And look, this isn't just in sports, this is in life in general, but we love, as a society, to build people up, put them on that pedestal, and then we can't wait for them to stub their toe so we can tear them down.
Well, and that's
and jump all over them and kick them when they're down. And that is just, for whatever reason, that is human nature.
Yeah. Well, and that's what's also interesting about Scotty is like, if you thought Tiger had that image, Scotty right now, I think, has that even more. Like him, like, as much as Owen's right, I don't know that you can sit there and say golf isn't what defines me and then be compared to Tiger necessarily. But,
well, if Scotty keeps winning, golf will be what defines him. Maybe
true,
not for him, maybe not for him personally.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you're talking about people looking from the outside,
when
in,
it's me and Daryl who I only watch majors, or I only watch the majors, right? I don't care about golf. Daryl, do you care about golf any other time?
No.
Right.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
Can I confess?
Go ahead.
Did not watch a minute. I didn't even realize there was a major this weekend.
Well,
I was so,
I was so, you were hosting the show during the final round.
Well,
so.
No, I was so wrapped up in other stuff going on in my life and things that I was doing. It was of no importance. Now, if Tiger was playing, if we were in the heyday of Tiger Woods, I would have absolutely 100% carved out time on Saturday and Sunday to watch.
I think that's the hardest thing with this comparison, though, is to the point of Scotty saying he does that golf doesn't define him. I think it's hard to.
That's a bad marketing slogan.
Well, I think it's hard for people to get behind a guy who, like, we said, people loved Tiger because he had the clean-cut image for so long. I think Scotty has that even more, but he's, like, less polarizing at the same time. Like, he really has to do the stuff that you're saying. Like,
well, Scotty got a chance yesterday to talk about it, right? So here he is after winning the Open.
I still think they're a bit silly. You know, Tiger won, what, 15 majors? It's my fourth. Just got one fourth of the way there. I think Tiger stands alone in the game of golf. You know, he was inspirational for me growing up, and he was a very, very talented guy, and he was a special person to be able to be as good as he was at the game of golf.
That's how you answer that question.
It is, but that also isn't what that also doesn't help him be polarizing, right?
Well, listen, he needs a better. Here we go.
If he was the polarizing player that people want in golf right now that they've been searching for years since Tiger really sort of had his falling out, like. They would want a guy who's like, yeah, listen, Tiger's great, but my goal is to catch him. Like, I want to get there. Like, he downplayed. I'm only a fourth of the way there.
I'm going to fix this for Scotty right now. Because this is what I
wear help. Red on Sundays.
Daryl's fixing people's lives.
This is what I do. I am here to help. Okay,
fix your life is back.
All right, here we go.
At 6:20.
First of all, better Sunday wardrobe, okay? We need a trademarkable Sunday wardrobe. For Scotty, that's number one.
Not light blue.
Number two, we need some Happy Gilmore in him. Okay, you got to do something on the golf course. Now Tiger had the big, demonstrative fist pump,
nice.
Right? We need something. Scotty's got to do something after sinking a putt or, you know, dropping it next to the pin on the green. Like he's got to do something.
It's got to be the emotion.
We need a trademark. Emotional response from Scotty, right? That everyone can imitate. Everyone used to do the Tiger Woods, the same thing with Scotty. And then the third thing is
he needs a little more attitude in his press conference answers.
Well, actually, I wasn't even
guys. There's only been one golfer arrested in the last calendar year, right? Or
That arrest helped him so much, like in terms of his image. It's crazy.
Now let's not talk about how he just kind of drove through a police barricade because he was told to.
Did you hear about the? Did you hear the audio from that? By the way, you probably didn't. But I was watching Full Swing, like the documentary they do on Netflix with the golf. Like they follow the PGA guys.
Well, all the stuff was posted on
right,
X.
But he like the guy's just like, you must be pretty good if you're playing in this tournament this weekend. Like the cop who arrested him, and he's like, yeah, I'm all right. Like. Like, I would have been like, yeah, I'm the gun number one golfer in the world.
If it was this year, would he be like, I'm Scotty Bleepin' Scheffler. What are you doing?
That's what he should have said. Yeah,
don't you know who I am?
Listen, I think what Scotty's doing is phenomenal because, and I tweeted this yesterday, like, it has to be pretty demoralizing for the rest of the field when Scotty has some tournament weekends where he's just not on, but the weekends where he's on, like this weekend, It's got to be as demoralizing as when Tiger's on because he just doesn't ever choke. He never chokes ever. Like he had a 4 or 5 stroke lead going into Sunday.
Well, you just jinxed him.
He had one hole where he double bogeyed and then like the next hole he birdies, he's back up like two more strokes.
He chokes away a major, I'm blaming you.
No, that's fine, but I'm just saying like
he had to put it out there in the ether.
He is a golf machine the same way Tiger Woods, but he just doesn't have like the personality that Tiger did. And so I think we are seeing like the most dominant stretch of golf since Tiger's peak, but I don't know that people are as into it. I think, Darryl, you're right. Like, he's going to have to do something remarkable, like win all four in a calendar year or something, or, you know, complete the career. If he gets the, if he tries to complete the career Grand Slam next year with the U.S. Open, I think he'll people will watch that. But there's I think you're right. Like, there's just a little bit of something missing, even though he is as dominant as we've seen, I think, in golf in quite some time. 216-474-92. Is Scottie Scheffler trending towards becoming the next Tiger Woods, or does he still have a long way to go, especially because he has to catch him in majors? Training camp's coming up here in just a couple days, and there's I feel like this collusion story and everything going on with the NFLPA of late has really kind of been a...
Yeah.
It's been a weird way to sort of kick off training camp week.
I don't know that you want to go into training camps with your players association in complete disarray the way it is in the NFLPA. And also, too, no players association seems to cave faster than the NFLPA. I mean, every time the league wants something, the PA says, yeah, sure, well, whatever, you know. you want us to play? Yeah, sure, no problem. Oh, now you want us to play anything? No problem. Like, it really is a massive, sloppy mess. And J.C. Treader, who has found himself right in the center of all of this, not only as a former Browns player, not only as a former player rep, not only as a former president of the NFLPA, but the fact that the collusion story involves or began with post Brown signing Deshaun Watson to that fully guaranteed contract.
Which, by the way, who would have what a turn of events if you mentioned it, Darryl. The NFLPA is notoriously one of the weakest when it comes to actually representing the players and getting the things that the players want done in these negotiations, right? What a turn of events if Deshaun Watson, of all people, is the thing that sparks change. With it, because that's where it all started. Like you said, it was the Deshaun Watson contract, the fully guaranteed contract, that then triggered and exposed the NFL for these. They won't call it collusion, but they'd call it their executive committee that meets and advises the owners on things that they should or shouldn't do, and apparently told them, hey, don't give out fully guaranteed contracts like this ever again.
Well,
and if that then leads to the demise of the Lloyd Howe situation and how that kind of got uncovered. And now J.C. Treader's out of there, even though it sounds like he had player support to still maybe become the next president of the organization or the head of the organization.
He had some current player support, but he certainly didn't have former player support.
I saw a lot of the tweets. Yes.
You know, guys like Ben Watson, tweets. Also another former Cleveland Brown, was like, hey, J.C.'s got to go. Look, what keeps the NFL competitive is the non-guaranteed contracts. Because if you sign a guy to a big deal in free agency, you can get out of it and you can move on. Major League Baseball, you can't. NBA,
it's fully guaranteed. Right.
You can't, right? So a mechanism that helps keep parity within the sport, well, everywhere except for here in Cleveland, because the Browns just can't get their you-know-what together. That mechanism is actually detrimental to the players in a sport that requires more physical sacrifice from its players than any other sport, okay? I mean, just look at the condition of former NFL players. It's jarring when you see, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but it's jarring when you see guys that you used to watch 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago today and how they're struggling to walk, talk, move their extremities, lift things, the pain that they're in, the medications that they're forced to take so that they can just live semi-everyday normal lives. And those guys aren't making the type of money that today's today's NFL player is. And the fact that, you know, I don't want to say it. The NFL's a dirty business. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of unspoken truths. There's a lot of unspoken rules. The fact that nobody really stepped up when Lamar Jackson was a restricted free agent, that guy was worth the two first-round picks if you tried to sign him and you put a poison pill in the deal, and if the Ravens didn't match, you had to send your first-round picks over, right? That dude was worth it. And nobody in the NFL was sniffing around. How can you not ask questions about that? You have a perennial MVP candidate whom your franchise could poach from Baltimore, and no one really sniffed around it. And then after that, Spencer, no one really asked why. Nobody really dug into that until now with, you know, Pablo Torres and what he's been able to unearth and put out on his show, his podcast, right? The information he's been able to uncover. And then we've seen Mike Florio kind of, you know, jump on it a little bit and get involved with some of the reporting. But the fact that nobody, after, you know, the Deshaun Watson contract and Lamar was a restricted free agent, nobody in the NFL was like, yeah, we need a franchise quarterback. Let's go get Lamar. And it who cares no if sense. He, I think, I forget if it's two or three first-round picks, but who cares? Get the Ravens our first-round picks. We get him. We put a poison pill in the contract so the Ravens can't match the contract to keep him. And nobody asked any questions about it. Business as usual.
Yeah, I thought it was weird, too, that, like, and even us in the media are probably somewhat guilty of this, because, like, some of us, I'm not saying us here in Cleveland necessarily, but some of us did try to sort of perpetuate this narrative that was out there where it was like, well, you know, these owners keep saying, oh, well, if you take Lamar Jackson, you got to change your entire offense for him. And it's like, I think you'd sign up for that if it meant you have an MVP caliber player who can get you to the playoffs. I know he hasn't had the success in the postseason yet, but everyone thinks at some point he's probably going to cash in and he'll get there because he's great. He's a great player. Like, who would not sign up for an MVP caliber player like that? Like, the Browns are going to have to wear the Deshaun Watson thing, but we know going back to that situation, there was at least like a third of the league that at least when that whole thing started, that was interested in Deshaun Watson.
Atlanta, New Orleans were right at the forefront. I think Carolina was in
the very end, because obviously like his ties to Carolina, like, There was at least a third of the league that when that whole process started, that was at least interested. And then he helped whittle the list down. The Texans whittled the list down because they were like, we're not going to trade him to certain places. And then it became that he ended up in the Browns because he got the fully guaranteed contract. Like,
yeah, because he originally told the Browns thanks, but no thanks. That's what keeps getting forgotten here. He originally told the Browns no.
Right.
Okay? And listen, when they tell you no, take them at their word.
That's your advice.
Yes.
That's your advice.
That is my advice in life. Yeah. And that is my advice in sports. When they tell you no, take them at their word.
We've gotten in the weeds on the Deshaun part of this now, but like I said, to relate it back to like Lamar, it was weird.
But if you're the union, why did you not get involved in that situation as the union? When Lamar is available, granted, yes, restricted free agent and compensate, you know, draft pick compensation would have to go to, but how nobody in the league went after Lamar, and then the union just sat back and was like, everything's fine, this is normal.
Yeah.
Like, how did you not investigate
and
that?
And as the Pablo Torre investigating found out, like, this is something that the union would have wanted out there, that there was a form of collusion going on.
You had a podcaster do more investigation than the players union.
Yeah, that's bad.
And that's no disrespect to Pablo Torre.
And now we know, and part of the reason why J.C. Treader was caught up in the crosshairs of all this was because of the comments he made after the fact about Russell Wilson and other players who weren't getting fully guaranteed contracts after Deshaun. And that's the problem. And now he's out, and the links to the Browns in this whole situation continue. And I do just kind of find it ironic that the worst trade in NFL history that the Browns made might actually end up being the agent for change to make the NFLPA maybe look in the mirror and change some things and become a more respected organization among the players.